Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
And we're joined by our friend Don Bentley, who has had one of the busiest 2022s of any writer that I've known. He was just here a month or so ago with his own book, Hostile Intent, and now he's back with the new Tom Clancy book. This one's called Zero Hour, and so I think it's his sophomore effort in the Tom Clancy regime here. And so, Don, when you put books back to back like this, does this mean you were writing them at the same time, or is this just how it kind of worked out?
Hey, Brian, thanks for having me back. I am maybe a man of many talents, but I could not write two books at the same time. And so what that looks like for me is right now I'm blessed enough, like you said, to have both my series, Hostile Intent, came out just last month, and then get to write in the Clancy universe, and so that means I write a book every 5 months. So 3 weeks ago, I turned in the fourth book in my series. It's called Forgotten War. It'll be out probably next May. And now I'm chin deep in the next Jack Ryan Jr. book that's due on October 15th. So fast and furious for sure.
Well, this one takes us to the Koreas, and Jack Ryan Jr. again is trying to prevent basically another Korean War. So as you kind of set this up for us, give us a little teaser on this one.
Yeah, absolutely. So my first assignment out of flight school as a young lieutenant, Apache pilot and cavalry trooper, was to South Korea. And so back then, that was the late 90s. It was obviously before September 11th in Iraq and Afghanistan. That was the closest to combat that you could get. And I say that from the standpoint that the two Koreas have never signed a peace treaty. They're still under armistice. And so what that meant is that North Korea would periodically shell different areas in South Korea. They would mix it up with their navies. You'd get firefights. And then you'd also have every now and then a North Korean submarine would run aground, and a bunch of North Korean special operations folks would be frantically, you know, causing mayhem across South Korea and getting chased by them. And so I really wanted to explore that further in a book and say, what would a conventional war in Korea look like? And you know, Tom Clancy's masterpiece, Red Storm Rising, that huge epic military thriller, was the first Clancy book I ever read as a kid, and I really wanted to try and write, not on that scale, but write a military thriller on the Korean Peninsula. And so the way that that plays out in the book is that the leader of North Korea is incapacitated due to a missile test that he went to that went wrong and put him in a coma. And because he's in a coma and incapacitated, there's a dead man switch that gets activated in the form of a series of North Korean sleeper agents that are in South Korea, whose job it is to prepare the way for a North Korean invasion of South Korea. And so that's the backdrop for it, and Jack Ryan Jr., who's the protagonist, is in South Korea to interview a helper for the campus. The campus is the off-the-books intelligence organization that he works for when this all kicks off. And so it's a ton of fun, and it was a ton of fun for me as a writer. I got to, one of the great things you get to do as a writer is put in Easter eggs in the book, and so many of these characters are actually friends of mine, and the folks who are in the Apache sequence, there's a huge section where I pay homage to my experience as a very young platoon leader in Korea and the men and women who shaped me and helped me become a better leader. And so I put them all in as characters in the book. And so what's been really neat is one of the guys I flew with, his now 22 or 23-year-old daughter walks into the bookstore, picks up a Tom Clancy book and finds her dad's name in the book and takes a picture of that and posts it on social media. So this has just been a ton of fun.
Is the idea of a dead man switch, is that a real thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly I took some liberties with the way I had it play out here. But the interesting thing about dictatorships, right, and North Korea, their form of government is very interesting. In that one hand, it's modeled kind of off the Stalinist version of communism. But on the other hand, it is also very much almost a monarchy, in that the rule of power is transitioned from father to son. And so when you're a dictator, there really is not a plan for a peaceful transference of power. You either die in office, perhaps of natural causes like Stalin did, or you die of some very non-natural causes like Gaddafi did and Saddam Hussein did. And so to me, it is, if you're a dictator, your primary concern is maintaining power and coming up with ways to hold on to that power when it's threatened. And so I certainly don't think the idea of a dead man switch that would help you hold on to power is too far-fetched.
When you're in the military and you're stationed in South Korea, I would assume that you're learning all kinds of things and then about the area. And then same thing when you write a novel like this. You're probably doing a lot of research on Korea. Mm-hmm. But do you know more about the Korean situation now that you're writing about it in a novel form than you did when you were actually there as part of the military?
You know, different things. And so what's interesting about Korea, so I stayed for 2 years in Korea. It's normally a one-year assignment, but when you're a platoon leader, you get there and you go straight to a staff job. And so they say, hey, I know you want to be a platoon leader, but to do that, you're going to need to extend. And the reason why that's important is that back when I was there, you would actually practice fighting the Korean War several times during your time there. And so over a two-year period of time, you know, probably three or four times or more than that, you would practice at different points in the year, spooling up to what it would look like for a Korean War. And so as an Apache pilot, you have two very unique jobs. And the first one being that you fly in the opening stages of the war, you fly an overwater mission where your job is to interdict these very fast boats that are coming down from North Korea that are full of special North Korean special operators. And these guys are primarily assassination squads whose job it is to go in and take out certain people within the South Korean government and then just cause mayhem until they link back up with the invading North Korean forces. The second one being this idea of a deep attack, and that as an Apache pilot, what your job was is to fly north over what's called the forward line of troops, which is where U.S., South Korean, and North Korean forces are fighting to interdict the mechanized formations that are coming down to be reinforcements. And so as a scout platoon leader, my job was to find a very specific formation. And so you would actually study the order of march, and so you'd know, okay, this is what I should see if I actually have my target. And you would practice that because you're going to go up there, and they have specific valleys that you're going to hunt these folks in. And so it was this incredible experience, especially as a young officer, to do that. And so I'd say I certainly knew more on the tactical perspective when I was actually serving in Korea. As a writer, what you want to do, though, is show that not just from the cockpit of an Apache, which you get to see in this book, but also from a more geopolitical perspective, like what is going on with the rest of the world as this happening. You know, one of the amazing things that most people don't know about the Korean Peninsula is Seoul, South Korea, the capital of South Korea, is one of the most densely populated cities in the world, and it's within range of the North Korean conventional artillery. And so everybody's worried about a nuclear bomb, and rightfully so. But if the war were to kick off, usually the first two or three days are what's called the artillery battle, where South Korean and U.S. artillery is trying to take out North Korean artillery and vice versa. And if that happened, Seoul would absolutely be decimated just by South Korean artillery. And so I think there's some crazy statistic that they think in the first 24 hours of the war, seven shells a minute would be falling on Seoul, South Korea. And so imagine that. Imagine a city like Manhattan where you have, for 24 hours, seven shells, you know, a minute are falling on Manhattan, and you start to grasp the potential for devastation if a Korean War ever kicked off.
I'm chatting with Don Bentley about his brand new book. It's The Zero Hour. It's the latest in the Tom Clancy Jack Ryan Jr. series. It's available everywhere. And if you haven't read Hostile Intent, which is Don's other book for his character Matt Drake, go out and pick that one up. You know, Don, I hear about you in South Korea. You know, I listen to you talk about being there, and I think about this whole idea. I think of the movie A Few Good Men, or the play A Few Good Men, and the Jack Nicholson character saying, you want me on that wall, you need me on that wall. And then I think about South Korea, and I say, you know, we don't go to bed at night here in the United States thinking about South Korea being a danger. We think about it once in a while, like when President Trump was over there meeting, and you think of all the dangers. But is that a situation where, when you're over there, this is a huge threat, and if Americans knew anything about the threat, they wouldn't sleep at night?
Yeah, I mean, when we were there, and they probably still call it this, it was very much termed Freedom's Frontier, because it was, I was in a camp that has since been closed down and I believe turned back over to the South Korean Army, but it was it's a little city called Wonju that was southeast of Seoul, and so we were, you know, less than an hour flight from the demilitarized zone, the DMZ that divides them, and so as part of your tour of duty in Korea, you would actually get what was called no-fly line qualified, where there's a line, geographical line, that is beyond north of that, you cannot fly, but if hostilities were to occur, that would be some where some of the first fighting would happen, and so you actually would spend a day getting qualified on the no-fly line, and you're just, you know, as an aviator, it's some of the best flying you ever get to do, because it has to be below a certain altitude, and you're whipping down these valleys and going up and down the other side of the mountain and flying over South Korean formations to learn the area that you will actually fight on if the war kicks off. And it's not, you know, it was going back to what I was talking about before with the South Korean forces who were marooned the North Korean Special Operations Forces who were marooned in South Korea. When their submarine ran aground and the South Korean Navy found that, they came on shore and found the crew, the sailors of that submarine, that were lined up, and they all either had their throats slit or were shot in the head, and the people who had done that to them were their passengers, were the Special Operations Commandos, because from their perspective, their Navy brethren were nothing but a hindrance as they were going to try and run across South Korea and try and get back to the North, and so they murdered their own countrymen rather than try and help them escape North, so they could continue on their mission. And so that's the level of fanaticism you're dealing with when it comes to North Korea and that North Korean and South Korean conflict.
Do you get the sense that, we don't hear stories like that, and in the United States, there's journalists embedded all over the place. Is it just a matter of they can't cover everything? Because that's not like a major event that should be a national headline rather than some of the things that become headlines here.
Yeah, and to be fair, I'm sure it was a headline back in the 90s when it happened. But I also think that when you're a journalist or when you're a politician or when you're a military leader, you look at different portions of the globe and say, where are the flashpoints right now? Where are the things that could erupt into war? And in the late 90s, that very much was Korea. If you remember, that was back in the time when Bill Clinton instituted a program to try and keep North Korea from getting a nuclear weapon that failed. They ended up still getting a nuclear weapon. And so for a long time, that was viewed as, here is where the next flashpoint is going to be, the next global war. And then when September 11th happened and caught not everyone by surprise, because there's a great book called Looming Tower, which when I was an FBI agent was kind of required reading, that walks through the history of radical Islamic terrorism, and that many people, unfortunately, weren't surprised by that. But the point being that the world's focus shifted away from the Korean Peninsula to, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, and the global war on terror. And now you're seeing it somewhat shift back, maybe not necessarily to the Korean Peninsula again, but to China and the near peer threat. And so you still have, you know, simmering on the back burner. There was a reason why George W. Bush included North Korea in his Axis of Evil speech. Still very much you have a nuclear-equipped tyrant. And we can see right now that what's happened, you mentioned my book Hostile Intent, which takes a look at a Russian invasion of Ukraine. The reason why, setting aside the horrible suffering the Ukrainian people are going through, why that is such a potentially world-changing event is because Russia, in the form of Putin, is a nuclear-armed nuclear-armed power. North Korea is a nuclear-armed power. And so what could be a very contained conflict on the peninsula, if it was a conventional war, changes the calculus of that changes very quickly when you're dealing with a person that has a nuclear weapon, and that is why it is so important that Iran not be allowed to obtain a nuclear weapon.
All right, the book is Zero Hour. It's the latest Jack Ryan Jr. novel in the Tom Clancy family. Don Bentley is the author, and this is just a great book. And if you haven't read Don's other stuff, go out and pick it up. It's all available on Amazon or wherever you buy your books. Don, just fantastic novel here. It's so thrilling to read, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
0 hour, 9 a.m.